This is the Max Kellerman Show. Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio.
Not only on ESPN Radio, on ESPN News, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, on your smart speaker. Presented by Progressive Insurance, all guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And by the way, you can call us at 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. But if you do call, this is not a social call. This is a radio show, a TV show too. This is not to say, what's up, how you doing, nothing like that. If you do, I will hang up. Just get to the point. By the way, if you have an opinion, you can tell me you love me, you hate me, that's fine. Contradict me, agree, whatever. Say what you want. Ask a question, make a comment, make a statement, start an argument. Whatever you want to do. But not, hey, what's up? No one has time for this. I know a lot of people are worried about, a lot of Lakers fans. I'm a Lakers fan. A lot of Lakers fans are worried about Portland. I don't see it. Portland was lucky to beat the Nets. The Nets had the seven seed sewn up. There was not a seeding game for them. There was nothing to play for. They were missing most of their team. And the Trailblazers had everything to play for. And the Blazers were lucky to beat the Nets. Well, how could you say that? No, they were lucky to beat the Nets. The reason I say that is Caris LeVert, their best player, had a look. It wasn't the greatest look in the world, but it was a reasonable look to win the game. He missed the shot. It's not like, okay, the defense forced him to take a long two, but in a one-point game at the end of the game, it doesn't matter if it's a two or a three. The reason for taking threes is not that they're easier to hit than a two. It's that you get more reward for it. But if it's the end of a game and a one-point game, who cares if it's a long two? Well, the defense made him take a long two. Whatever. He had a decent look. And he missed it. They had to rely on his miss. It was not like amazing defense. They didn't stop the Nets at all. How are they going to stop the Lakers? Well, the Lakers don't have enough shooting. I don't know. Danny Green, it's not like this is his first rodeo in the playoffs. Danny Green is the prototypical 3-and-D guy still. Really good defender. And throughout his career, 40% from three, shooting almost five threes a game. That's an excellent three-point shooter. Okay, this season he's off, especially in the bubble. But for this season, he's around 37% from three. That's still a good three-point shooter. And Kuzma is not a great shooter, but has shown under pressure in moments in this bubble, he can rise to the occasion. He's not part of a big three. I mean, it's not a big three in L.A. It's LeBron and AD and whatever else they could cobble together. But Danny Green is a legitimate 25-minute-a-night guy on a good team, and that's what he is on the Lakers. And Kyle Kuzma is still ascending. To what level he reaches, I don't know. But he's an NBA rotation piece, at least. You ain't going to beat the Lakers playing defense like the Blazers. You know, apologies to Damian Lillard, who's on a mission, was the best player in the bubble. But the Mavs, I don't think they beat the Clippers either. But the Mavs? See, Luka Doncic is ridiculous. Everyone, and he's been playing in leagues that he really shouldn't be ready for since he was a kid. And he has that smell like he ain't going to be intimidated by the moment. Luka's going to be fine. Raj is talking on my Zoom screen here. I can hear every word he's saying. Maybe mute the thing so I don't hear you while I'm in the middle of a segment. So anyway, Luka Doncic is amazing, but and he's in the MVP conversation, right? But what people don't realize is Kristaps Porzingis, when that degenerate franchise, the New York Knicks, who tortured me for years before I became a Lakers fan, when that franchise traded Kristaps Porzingis on his rookie deal for a bag of potato chips, for a ham sandwich, and then had the nerve to say, well, we need to rebuild. Right, you rebuild around a 7'3" guy who can shoot from the outside, take bigs off the dribble, defend the paint, defend in space, and who is still getting better. That's who you build. Could you imagine the Rockets being like, well, we needed to rebuild, so we traded Olajuwon. When he was on his rookie deal, the Mavs with Dirk or or, you know, Greg Popovich, well, we had to move Tim Duncan on his rookie deal to get pieces we need to build. You build around Porzingis, geniuses. But, okay, Porzingis got hurt. normally the kind of injury, a catastrophic injury that he had, it takes a year to recover and then a year to get back to where you were. But this time off, because of the pandemic, gave him a little more time. And in the bubble, he's been a monster. What, he's averaging like 30 and 10? For the season, he's at 20 and 10 with two blocks. Shooting 35%, a little better from three. At seven, he's 2 inches taller than Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and he shoots 35% from three. And his offense, not the best part of his game, is the defense is. I'm just saying, there could be, if he stays healthy, an MVP in Porzingis' future. And Luka's in the conversation now. And then you add a guy like Seth Curry who can shoot the lights out. Seth Curry is, that whole Curry family, I mean, this is ridiculous. They got radar in the ball when it comes out of their hand. I want to say Seth Curry shooting like 45% from three this year. I don't know. Rod, you could look that up. He's shooting, but you just know that's a pure shot in that family. I don't think they play enough defense to beat the Clippers, but all right, look, it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Straight Talk Wireless, everything for less, only at Walmart. We got that Doncic sound? Well, let's hear it.
Well, talking, I'm not worried. You know, I'm used to it. I've been dealing with that since a couple of years back, so I'm not worried about that. But, yeah, they're physical, you know. That's the other problem, you know. They're physical. They're going to be talking, you know. But they have Patrick Beverley, and then they have Paul George and Kawhi, which are amazing defenders, too. And they have Zubac, which is, I think, very underrated inside defender, too. And, you know, it's going to be tough. Like I said before, we got to be physical.
I know Rick Carlisle's been praising his defense recently, Luka's. I would defer to Rick Carlisle's eye for defense. But Luka's he's a sieve on defense. Like, that dude just leaks. But on offense, he's ridiculous. And I know now people are careful not to just say Larry Bird when they say Luka because he's like 6'8 and white. And you don't want to just say that automatically because it means you're kind of like profiling someone or kind of stereotyping them based on race. But the fact is he does have a lot in common with Bird. If you want to say Magic, fine, because also Magic didn't play a lot of defense. Bird was actually a tough defender. But Magic was really a point guard. He was the size of a forward, but he played point guard. He also jumped at center in the finals as a rookie and gave him 42, like 15 and 7. But he was a point guard. Bird was a forward, a small forward and a power forward, but he frequently got the team into the offense. And that's really Luka. Luka's a small forward who nevertheless gets his team into their offense, right? And does and has like a sixth sense about in terms of anticipating what's going on. He's a savant. Doesn't shoot it great, you know, from outside. Luka shoots it a lot, but doesn't shoot it great. There's actually, it's kind of scary. There's room for improvement. He gets to be a better defender and a better shooter, and there's no reason to think that he can't, given his age and his progress. It's going to be a problem if Porzingis stays healthy. I think this is a year or two too early for them, but I would not be surprised if they extended the Clippers. I know the Clippers in the regular season, for what it was worth, had really made easy work of Dallas, but I between the two LA teams, everyone's looking at Lakers and Portland as a tough matchup. I think the Clippers drew a sleeper in these playoffs. That's a team I would, you know, and they got the size. You're giving up 130 points a night like Portland, I don't see you bothering the Lakers. You have Luka and, apologies to Damian Lillard, who's playing out of his mind. You have Luka and Porzingis. And then you got a shooter like Seth Curry getting real minutes on the team, too. If that went at least six games, I know a lot of people, oh, Portland could take the Lakers seven. I see the Lakers closing that out in six or under. But if the Mavs took the Clippers six games at least, I would not be surprised. Coming up, the Sixers have won 3 of 4 against the Celtics. But does any of that matter without Ben Simmons? Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, or your smart speaker, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And you know what, Raj, I got to see in the business, everyone, it's called a tease. I teased you about the Sixers and the Celtics. I think. Wasn't that the tease, Raj? I don't remember. That was a tease.
You said, man, you said that.
But the point is,
you dropped some knowledge.
I can't be expected to remember things from 5 minutes ago. But the point is that I haven't gotten to a lot of calls. 888-729-3776. That's 888-SAY-ESPN. Let's take a call. What do we have? Can I take a call? I can't. Raj has fixed it, so I can't see the calls. Let's get to Nathan in Jersey.
Yeah, this is Nate.
Hey, Nate, what's I almost did it. I have to hang up on myself. What you got to say, Nate?
I want to see reparations written on the back of those NBA jerseys, and I want to see Art Russ Jr. get a 30-30 documentary.
All right, first of all, reparations, you want to get into reparations now? I mean, the fact is that there should be reparations. This is not rocket science. I'm not going to get into all of that right now. That's a deep issue, but it's fairly obvious. And Art Russ Jr., what'd he say? Art Russ Jr., 30 for 30? Art Russ Jr., talking sports in New York. Listen, I grew up listening to a lot of radio. My parents are crazy, and my mother decided that at a certain point, all right, so I didn't get the best grades, and she decided, you know, no TV during the week. So I don't know, I'm 14 years old, I'm like, the Yankees are playing or the Knicks are playing. You can't listen to it on the radio. All right, so I listened to it on the radio. I started listening to a lot of radio. And Art Russ Jr. talking sports. I used to call in. See, I know when callers call into a radio show, your heart's beating faster, right? Like as you're going on the line, you hear then you hear that it changes in your ear from like listening to the radio. The sound quality changes. You know you're about to go on the air. Because I would call in Art Russ Jr. talking sports every now and then, right? He was a local sports show in New York. It was the best. I reparations is a big topic, and I'll get into it on this show in the coming weeks and months and years. I'm not going to do it right now, except to say, yeah, you think, Sherlock, that reparations are due? Yeah, no kidding. Jalen in Alabama, go ahead.
Yo, Max, I just wanted to say the Celtics, they got four players that give you 20, and they play good defense, great supporting cast. We're going to win a championship, man.
I don't see this. Listen, the Celtics have a puncher's chance. They have a puncher's chance. Not just forget about the four guys who can give you 20. They got five guys who they can start who are all at least, I'd say above league average. Every single person in their starting five is above league average. Up to all-star. But they don't have an MVP caliber player. Not at the moment. That's not Tatum yet. But Tatum clearly shows you he can be eventually the best player, certainly the best offensive player, on a championship team. And if that happens this year, because things are a little funky this year, okay. I like the way they're constructed. I think they're a little small and not as deep as, say, Toronto. And there's no player on that team like Giannis. But in a season like this, to say the Celtics have a puncher's chance, yeah, as I said, that's right. Is that supposed to mean a puncher's chance? That sounded like punches, kicks, knees. That was
That was a counter puncher. He wasn't a one punch guy. He was a counter puncher.
Yeah, that was from an old kung fu flick or something.
Yeah, but the caller said they got four guys with 20, so those are four 20-point scorer punchers. Go ahead.
Joseph in California, you're on with Max Kellerman. This is the Max Kellerman Show.
What's up, Max? Hey, I want to say, I know that.
Do I let that go, Raj?
You say that you're a Laker fan. Okay, you are a Laker.
All right, just get rid of him. Get rid of him. I have to make an example. I know, you want to let him talk, but I already told everybody several times. No, what's up? Come on, let's get to it.
He didn't say how you doing. He just said what's up. It was on the fence.
Maybe I was a little.
But harsh. You have to set an example early. You're right.
I do. I had to make an example of him. It's true.
Yeah.
Gary in North Carolina. Go ahead.
Yes. The question I want to ask is Canelo Alvarez, when is Jamal Charlo going to get his shot? He's been waiting for 2 years.
All right. Okay. Appreciate the call and all that. Get rid of this guy, too. Listen, here's the problem. When did I say I was good? We're talking about boxing. I mean, I'll talk about. Charlo and Canelo, both Charlo brothers can really fight. They can really fight. And they're starting to build resumes and they're tough guys. And eventually, if either Charlo brother shows that that's who the public is demanding to see Canelo fight, he'll fight him. At the moment, does the risk outweigh the reward? I don't know, partly it's that DAZN owes so much money to Canelo per fight. There's not a lot left over for his opponents. So I think at this point, barring someone they feel can really generate extra money, like maybe Triple G at this point, right, in a third fight, barring a situation like that, why take the risk against Charlo when it's not worth any more money to you, but you got to pay your opponent more? So, you know, you see what I mean? Like, why not take a softer touch? I understand. It's not in the long run, Canelo fights everybody. Look at who he fought. Errez Landy, Lara, and Austin Trout, when no one wanted to go near those guys. And then he was the guy who stepped up to fight Triple G. Already fought Daniel Jacobs. Canelo ain't running from anybody. But I do agree that that is a risk-reward fight right now that maybe is a little off for him. And the Charlo brothers, they keep fighting. They're going to get their big fights. Michael in Maryland, you're on with Max Kellerman. This is the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Yo, Max, how you doing, man?
Damn. Ah, Michael in Maryland. You know what? Hold on. Don't click him off because I want to talk about this topic. Go ahead, Michael.
I actually dropped him already. Sorry.
Oh, you already dropped him. Good. That's discipline. I'm the soft one. You guys are actually enforcing the rules. I like that. Cody in California. Go ahead.
And Paul George is not really known for, you know, getting buzzer beaters hit on him and stuff. And you think he can perform defensive-wise, say, the Western Conference?
Hold on one second. Cody. Do you remember what I said about Art Russ Jr.? When I was 14 years old, I would call up, because someone brought up Art Russ Jr., great radio sports guy when I was a kid and in New York. And I said, like, I know what it's like to be a caller, and you call up, and your heart's beating fast. Right? Cody, that's what your voice sounds like. Are you nervous right now? Like, before you click on, you start talking, do you get nervous because, like, I'm about to be on a radio show?
A little bit, man, a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. See, I could hear it. Just calm down. Let's start from the beginning now and tell me what you want to say. You're saying Paul George, is it a question or is that your opinion that you don't know what, you don't trust Paul George in the playoffs?
I'm just asking you think he can perform, like, defensive-wise when it comes, like, Western Conference, you know, spotlights on him?
I do, and the reason I do is some guys are miscast as the number one guy. But Paul George is so good, even on a team with, like, Westbrook, he's the best player. And he is best suited to be Pippen. I'm not saying he's Scottie Pippen, but he has a lot of things in similar. Not everything, but, you know, he does certain things really well like Pippen did. Shoots it better, maybe doesn't pass it as well, obviously, but he needs to be Pippen to someone else's Jordan, right? That's how he's best suited. And Kawhi is better than him. And so Paul George can play Robin, and I think comfortably do that in the playoffs. And yes, I expect him to perform well, particularly on the defensive end. By the way, check out ESPN Audio at home by telling Alexa to play, play news from ESPN. Say, Alexa, play news from ESPN. ESPN Audio at Home is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Vans. Drive a Mercedes-Benz van and find out how far an extra mile really goes. From customization and service to financial assistance, Mercedes-Benz Vans are ready for anything. Now, coming up, I'm joined by the baddest man on the planet, a guy who's now being called the greatest heavyweight champion in history. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio, is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive Commercial is proud to partner with the small business experts at SCORE. Access free online resources through the SCORE Small Business Resilience Hub at score.org. And thank you for making the screen go blurry during that very difficult read, Raj. The print is like a... Yeah. You need to be a fighter pilot to see the print in the first place from this distance. And then Raj does something to the computer that makes it go blurry. While we wait for Stipe Miocic, who some people are saying, not without cause, is maybe the greatest UFC heavyweight in history. I don't know if people think he's better than Fedor, like, overall MMA history, but let me pay off the tease from two segments ago because I never talked about the Sixers and the Celtics. You know, people talk about the four scorers on the Celtics. That's obviously Kemba Walker, Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum. Tatum's the best scoring option they have. Kemba's the best overall, you know, scoring option. But, like, you can see Tatum's upside. And then what I love about Jaylen Brown and Gordon Hayward is they can get their points in the flow of the game, you know? It's really, they're kind of ideal complements. And then Daniel Theis, by the way, not the tallest dude in the world, but a real good player. I think Theis is above average. Whether you call him a four or a five, really on this team, I guess he'd be the five in their best lineup defensively. But if it's him and not Kanter, but he's above average. They don't have a single below average player really at any position, and they got some guys off the bench. But they're playing a Sixers team without Ben Simmons. It's not, you know, anything the Sixers do is gravy. It's not that Embiid isn't a whole lotta. It's that, and by the way, I've been on the record, I've been on First Take talking about how they'd be better off building the team around Simmons, given, well, now Simmons has a real injury history, but given at the time Embiid's injury history and the fact that you saw the progress of the Greek freak, who was similar to Simmons in a lot of ways, didn't have Simmons handles, right? But also, like, and shot better than Simmons. At least he would shoot the ball from the outside. But were similar in a lot of ways in terms of their size and what they could do and how they could fit in the team and all that stuff. And the freak kept getting better and better and better. Now he's an MVP-caliber player. And Simmons' offensive progress, I think, was somewhat stalled by the fact that it's not just his team. It's Embiid's team, too. If anything, it's Embiid's team. So I thought that Simmons would, they'd do well to build a team around Ben Simmons. But that doesn't mean that Simmons and Embiid can't play well together. They can. They're really tough together. Over smaller sample sizes, you can always say, oh, they're better without when Embiid's without Simmons and all that stuff. But the big picture says, of course that makes the Sixers tough to beat when they're together. Even if, let's say, Simmons would be better off with his own team. You put him with Embiid, it's a whole lot. Whole lot of. But you take Simmons off that. And I know, look, they had to put him in the dunker spot last year because he doesn't shoot at all. And now with Shake Milton, you really can do that. And also because Horford and Embiid, for some reason, don't work on the floor together. Who would have thought that Horford, who can do everything, couldn't play the four? So for a variety of reasons, maybe they weren't using Simmons to his best advantage, including the fact that he never learned to shoot. But I'm just saying, Raj. Yes, Raj. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that, I just want you.
Yeah.
I know it sounds very important.
Yeah, yeah, the guy, very important. Very my theory about Ben Simmons. Go ahead. What is it?
Oh, you know, I reached out to Miocic's people, and they know he hasn't called yet, so they're poking around for him.
Mm. Boy, I'm killing him, boy. I tell you, I'm on fire.
Yeah,
he had his eye. I'm just on fire.
Cormier poked Miocic in the eye, and then got it in return worse. So Raj felt it was important to interrupt my brilliant flow in order to make that stupid joke. Thank you, Raj. I appreciate that. And really, it's not even about the joke. You just want to see that headshot.
Chris, you like that joke, didn't you? Wasn't that fire, Chris, on day one?
I thought that was a great joke for day one. I'm just going to say.
I tell you right now, Max, yeah. Somewhere Michael Thomas, the great Michael Thompson, played that is rolling. He is just laughing at that.
Yeah, that's right. Dad humor. All right, you know what? I'm not even going to finish my point. Who cares? But the point is, of course, the Sixers are going to lose that series. They don't have Ben Simmons. Those are crib notes. Crib notes. Did I say crib notes? Crib notes. Tyler in Texas. Go ahead. You're on the Max Kellerman Show.
Congratulations on the new show, Max. I just wanted to know, outside of Tatum and Embiid, who do you think is the X factor in the Boston and Philly series?
Outside of Tatum and Embiid, who's the X factor? I don't think this series comes down to an X factor. You know, I think that the Celtics have this. The problem is the Sixers were at a crossroads and decided to invest a lot of their resources. I don't think Butler wanted to stay, right? So once Jimmy Butler left, they invested a lot of their resources in Al Horford, which was an interesting idea, I thought. Like, where are they going to get the, you know, once Butler's gone and they bring in some defensive help and hope that the defensive help can shoot well enough that Horford, who can shoot it for a big, can play the four. And who would I never would have guessed Horford would be such an awkward fit. And because of that, so it's like Tobias Harris, who can catch and shoot and stuff, but is not a great offensive player. He's a nice offensive player. They come up with Shake Milton. That's, you know, I guess if you want to say if Shake can play like at least an average or above average NBA point guard, then maybe they can get it done. But still, the issue has been that Embiid and Horford can't share the floor. That's otherwise, you just say, well, Horford steps in where Simmons would be at the four, and you have no problem. So I just don't see how the Sixers beat the Celtics. I don't think this comes down to an X-factor guy. If you want me to pick a guy, I'll say Theus's defense on Embiid from the Celtics' point of view and Shake Milton playing over his head from the Sixers' point of view. How's that? Pretty good, right? I haven't gotten to a lot of calls today, Raj. Now, what are you going to do? So, no Miocic.
He did call in, and let's just say he got knocked out by one of our own. So one of our own knocked him out.
One of our own knocked him out. I don't know what that means. It's a cryptic response.
It's not too cryptic. I accidentally hit the wrong button and dropped him.
Chris dropped him.
Friendly fire.
You mean to tell me the heavyweight champion of the world coming off, I would say it's fair to say, his greatest victory because having won this fight, now there are a lot of people saying he's at least the greatest heavyweight in the history of the UFC.
Yeah. He put a guy
into MMA.
He put a Hall of Famer into retirement, and Chris is going to go in and hang up on him.
What can I say? I'm a DC fan.
That was a close fight, by the way. I thought Cormier made a strategic mistake. Not that, listen, they can both strike and they can both handle themselves on the ground, obviously, but Cormier's background is really wrestling. And I think he fell in love with his power a little bit because he had success against Miocic in both fights. You know, hitting him. Like, okay, one time Stipe survived, shook it off, but both times. And I think he fell in love with that right hand. Maybe he should have taken it to the ground a little bit more. But anyway, it was a close fight. All right, look. You heard me on First Take this morning. Up next, check out my last take. Very clever. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN.
You heard First Take?
At least it's good to hear your voice finally, because yeah. I know on First Take, I only hear you on the intro and outro.
Now hear Max's last take.
Okay, so last take. This is a very clever play on. I like the synergy between the shows. You know how Marcellus is like, he only hears me on the intro and outro of First Take? Because Stephen A. is talking the rest of the time. I got to get Stephen A. on this show. Just to explain, he is really under the impression that I hog all the airtime. That I'm the one who takes all. I swear. Yes, Raj is saying no. Raj, go ahead. Yep. Tell the people what you want to say. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You're making that up. He doesn't believe that.
I'm not making it up. I'm not making it up. I'll get Stephen A. on the show to admit it.
Okay, I want to hear.
He doesn't.
From
he says mom. It on First Take. What are you talking about? All right. So listen. So this is last take. We're going to re-air something that occurred on First Take today, and I'm going to get a little deeper into it. Go ahead, Raj. Play the sound.
Maybe I can just tell you the kind of conversations that.
All right, wait.
Dan,
stop
Tanya
the sound. Stop the sound. I have to set that up better than that. I have to set it up better than that. Okay.
Yes, you do.
So the Washington franchise has hired a new president of football operations, right? Of business. And I'm literally looking up his name because now it's. I swear to God, before he got off the air on First Take today, his name is Jason, right? I called him Chris. I don't know why I did that. But now the name Chris is stuck in my head. What can I tell you? Jason Wright, of course, former running back, is the first African-American team president in the history of the NFL. And we had him on First Take. Now, and who hired him? Dan Snyder, the owner of the Washington football franchise. I'm used to calling them the Washington football franchise because I've refused to say that racist name, that offensive name, for years now. I remember when I was 8 years old watching, I think I was 8 or 9 years old, watching the Riggins, the John Riggins, Rigonomics Super Bowl, and asking my father, because football, NFL was the last sport I came to. It was boxing and baseball and then the NBA. And then football I started watching around the age of 7 or 8. And so the first Super Bowl I remember was either I'm forgetting the order of the years, but it's either Washington or Cincinnati against San Francisco. But the Rigonomics Super Bowl anyway was one of the first that I saw, and I was starting to really follow the NFL more. I remember turning to my father and saying, wait, they call the team, that's the name? And he was like, back then, like if you were socially conscious, even back then, talking about 1981 or something, 82, 84, whatever it was, He was like, yeah, I don't know, they shouldn't, but they do. It's not like that was something new. You could see the writing on the wall there. They weren't going to get away with that forever. So Washington is the one that hires the first African-American team president. And we had him on, Jason Wright, First Take today, to talk to us about it. And so now, is that setting up Last Take properly, Raj? There it is. Now you'll listen to Jason Wright, what he had to tell me on First Take earlier today, and I'm going to get into it. Go ahead. Play this out.
Maybe I can just tell you the kind of conversations that Dan, Tanya, and I had leading up to this. We didn't talk about race. We didn't talk about, you know, civil rights. We didn't even really talk about my research on racial equity and stuff that I've done previously, which is an area of passion of mine. We talked about disruptive technologies and how they can expand the business. We talked about financial operations. We talked about what it means to build a great stadium. And that's, we did touch on equity a bit there and doing a stadium with equitable principles that gets capital into all parts of the D.C., Maryland, Virginia community in a way that boosts economic development. We talked about doing the role. We talked about culture. We talked about, you know, setting things right where they need to be set right in the organization. We talked about charting a new course, having a new public narrative about the club. You know, we didn't talk about like, hey, man, it's really good that you're black. That's going to help me. That didn't come up. Insofar as I see my mandate for the role based on those conversations, it's about business. And the fact that I'm black, I will be unapologetically black throughout my tenure in this role. So it'll show up, but it's not the lead here.
I know this is, you just got there, but why do you say it might be a minute before you guys have a name?
So it's not just about a name or a logo. It's actually about an identity, not just what we put on our jerseys and put on our helmets, but it's going to inform how we shape the fan experience, what we do charitably in the communities. It's going to be a new way of engaging with the world, a new narrative from the club. And so, you know, something like that, it needs to take some time. We need to engage our fans, engage our players, engage our staff, engage our sponsors, so that it is a community decision.
Guys doing a lot of engaging. Jason Wright's going to be Jason Wright's going to run for office one day. Whew, was that smooth. Listen, of course the lead is that the Washington franchise, with an outrageous name, that the spoiled billionaire owner, Dan Snyder, obstinately refused to change for years, and finally was forced to, against his will, yield to the will of the people, right? Because there was unbearable financial pressure exerted. Finally, after he said, write it down, mark my words, all caps, I will never change the name, he submitted and changed the name. Not only that, he hired an African-American president, team president. That's not a coincidence. Of course, we don't live in a post-racial world. Of course, the lead is that he's the first African-American team president in the history of the NFL. Of course, that's the lead. Because the fact that that had to happen as late as 2020 is because the humanity of black folk has been criminalized, was literally criminalized for a long time, and then largely marginalized since it stopped being criminal. And it's an embarrassment, really, that it's taken this long. And yet you want to celebrate the fact that it's finally happened. But I think his point that I agree with is that when he's saying that's not the lead is the most qualified candidate's got the job. When you eliminate from a pool of applicants half the population, as is frequently done with women, or a huge percentage of the population, as is frequently the case with African Americans, it's bad business sense. You're unlikely to find the best candidate if those groups are excluded. And you can't tell me that those groups haven't been excluded. It just so happens that they've never been the best candidate ever until today? Get out of here. Statistically, virtually impossible. Racist structures have kept that in place, but I'm happy to see that that is at long last slowly changing. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.